Welcome back to A People's Guide to Publishing. I'm Joe Beal, the founder and CEO of Microcosm Publishing and Distribution. I'm also the author of A People's Guide to Publishing, which distills what I've learned from selling millions of books over the past 25 years.
I'm Ellie Blue. I'm the editorial and marketing director here at Microcosm. We are an independent mid-list publisher based in Portland, Oregon. We have 14 employees, over 650 titles in print with 20 to 40 new books per year, and we distribute thousands of titles from other publishers.
We started this podcast so that we can share what we've learned with newer publishers so that you can learn from our mistakes.
Or maybe you just want to understand the publishing industry.
Legging and boots. Ooh, leggings and boots.
This week, we are going to talk about bootlegging and not my intense and incredible fashion, sadly.
Leggings and boots? I wish.
We should instead
make that our dress code.
What is bootlegging?
What is bootlegging? I think about, like, Prohibition-era rum.
It's a pretty good one, yeah. Bootlegging then meant more, like, manufacture of something without the government's permission and or against the rule of the state, you know, versus in our example. And I guess it's kind of the same way, because it's, like, bootlegging nowadays refers more to manufacture, say, speed in a warehouse somewhere in, say, Minneapolis, nobody would refer to you as a bootlegger, even though that's, like, a controlled substance that is against the law to manufacture. They would refer to you as a bootlegger if you manufactured something where in violation of intellectual property law, which is kind of a funny way that meaning has changed over 100 years.
So in publishing, what are we looking out for when we talk about bootlegging?
So bootlegging in publishing is most commonly somebody distributing ebooks and or pirated versions of ebooks without permission. To a much lesser degree, it is something producing print books without permission, though again, you just don't really see that because it's like the risks and the rewards don't really pencil out.
I guess there's other countries where that's a bigger issue.
Yeah, that's true. People will do bootlegs, like we did a book about Cambodia and called Cambodian Girl. And, you know, we essentially knew that bootlegs would immediately appear in Cambodia as soon as we produced it, you know, and so that was kind of that. But, you know, and then you'll have more white-collar... I mean, I guess these are all white-collar crime examples, but you'll see, like, a popular kind of print bootlegging is more along the lines of, like, a publisher has a licensing dispute with an author, so they will, like, find an arguable position with which to remove the author from the work.
Ooh.
This happened pretty recently. Ooh. Where a book that... So a publisher who had once been independent got acquired, and in that acquisition it came to light that one of their books was in fact in no way involving the author. They literally just made up a pen name for a book that had been written by a popular author.
Wow.
And then sort of skirted. And I'm guessing that lawyers were involved. Yeah. It seems like the kind of thing where, like, how could they not be? So that's, like, an example of bootlegging, but you wouldn't really think of it as bootlegging in the traditional sense.
What about the case where the author is like, I'm fed up with working with you, publisher. I don't care that we have a contract. I'm publishing this book myself.
That would be bootlegging. They would be, I mean, assuming that they were prohibited from doing that.
If the contract.
Like, yeah, if the contract said that the publisher has exclusive rights and they didn't give the rights back to the author, then the author could not publish their own edition of the book. And that, yeah, you know, I mean, that's not completely unheard of, and it's also not completely unheard of the phenomenon where the author does not read and or understand the contract or does not bother to, like, make sense of it before proceeding.
I mean, I feel like, honestly, there are plenty of bootleggers out there who don't realize they're bootlegging. Like, I think my favorite bootleggers are the people that you see, like, outside the anarchist book fair because they didn't want to pay the tabling fee. Right. The blankets spread out in the rain, and they have a bunch of, like, their own versions of zines.
Right, where they, like, copied somebody else's work and are producing it and giving it away or selling it for cheap, you know?
And, like, we have people contact us all the time about doing that with zines and being like, I'm gonna make my own copies of your zines, you know? Like, not thinking that it's, like, someone's intellectual property or that, like, the author needs to be paid or anything. Yeah. More just thinking, like, I'm gonna do this service for the world.
Right. And it's like, you know, and that is sort of the same kind of fundamental misunderstanding as the, I don't even know that the person that does, like, that's a digital pirate has that misunderstanding. I feel like they're often pretty clear on exactly what they're doing, and they just kind of can't help themselves.
I mean, they have all sorts of justifications.
Don't we all?
Yeah. So, anyway, what should a publisher do about bootlegging?
So, I mean, it's good to, A, not participate in bootlegging yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so you
solid
should
advice.
Have a generalized awareness of what is and is not bootlegging. You know, and there's definitely cases where, you know, you're going to have, like, you can upset people without bootlegging. You know, I mean, it's not to say that it will massively solve that problem, but it will massively solve that problem because, you know, if you have a good set of agreements and a good set of relationships, you likely won't run into the problem of the author, you know, wanting to retract your agreements. But then, you know, in the event that you do, having an agreement where, you know, that's fairly ironclad, where it's like there is a way that you terminate the agreement and there is a way where the author gets their rights back and what that looks like, and, you know, is for the best. You know, like, you don't want to trap somebody in the agreement for the sake of trapping them in the agreement. You want that agreement to ideally be mutually beneficial, but in barring that, you definitely want that agreement to, you know, if you are the publisher holding on to an agreement, you want to only do that for the sake of it being beneficial to you. You don't want to do it just despite the person that you're not getting along with.
Tempting as that might be.
And I, like, that is often the thing, that's the conversation that I have with publishers most often, where they're like, this person wants their book back and I don't want to give it to them. And you're like, you know, why not? You know, like, they,
right.
You know, and it's like one thing if, you know, I had a phone call a few weeks ago in this very room where I thought that was what the author was going to ask for, as their book is now, you know, they wrote the book over 20 years ago. And instead they were like, no, I want to distribute the proceeds from this book I wrote over 20 years ago to other people that are embarking upon creative projects. You no longer need to pay me royalties.
Sometimes please don't, it's heartwarming.
Spread my name in a way that will popularize me in the course of distributing these funds either. You know, and I was like, oh, cool. Yeah, that's fun. We can do that, you know. And, you know, this has been, you know, normally, you know, I get it. It's like when you know, author has feelings, and often those feelings are that they could do the publication and distribution of their book better than their publisher, and maybe sometimes they even can.
So what about, like, the ebook piracy thing? How do we handle that?
So we have people with baseball bats with spikes through them. And then
they board your ship and they
mm-hmm. And they have flaming beards also. That's like an important aspect of cracking down.
And they keel haul you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they, you know, plunder and burn your ship to the ground. I mean, I don't know what else there would be to do. But in the digital era, given we have the equivalency, which is called the DMCA takedown notice, which is basically the shorthand. So because piracy, it was apparent that it was going to be so rampant and out of control in the new millennium because of the internet, the government created a law that said that there had to be a simple way offered to say, hey, you don't have permission to use this, remove it, you know? And so if something is on a file server, that file server can be shut down if they don't comply, if it's, like, for sale on, you know, Amazon or on a third-party site or on one of these sites that, you know, makes money by offering printing and distribution services. You know, there has to be a way for the author to say, no, this is mine, and here is, you know, my trademark and or copyright notice, you know, you have to remove it. And, you know, that is just so you don't have to hire a lawyer to do that, you know, is why. And so it doesn't become expensive. Though the trouble, of course, is that we tend to run into these instances where the exact same party will put it for sale on the exact same platform again several weeks later.
Whack-a-mole. Mm-hmm. You can't win them all, but you can win some of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and again, it's like a lot of people that, like, mean well and all that, but, you know, it's like when it's a trademark specifically, you have to protect it or you lose the claim to the mark. And I think that is weird and complicated and hard to understand and, you know. But it's all the more reason, once again, to not be a pirate and to research, you know, if you believe a book that you want to publish is in the public domain, of verifying that information before you proceed. And, you know, if you are using a phrase or image, to make sure that it is not trademarked or copyrighted, you know. Thanks for joining us once again.
Please send your questions to podcast@microcosmpublishing.com so we can answer them on future episodes.
And please give us 5 stars on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are reviewed.
You can find us on the internet at microcosm.pub.
On Twitter at microcosm.
On Facebook at microcosm publishing.
On Instagram at microcosm_pub.
And here in Portland, Oregon on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful week.